Before we begin today's show, have you listened to First Take Her Take yet? It's a new ESPN podcast that's generating a lot of buzz around these parts. So if you're interested, you can check it out along with Stephen A. Smith's new podcast, which features the best interviews from his ESPN Plus show, Stephen A.'s World. This week on the podcast, Stephen A. talks to Snoop Dogg. Exciting stuff. Check out Stephen A.'s World wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing at lunchtime on Wednesday, a little earlier than normal. The second half NBA schedule is supposed to come out in a few hours, and there's a whole bunch of NBA games tonight, so we won't know what happened there. So, tough. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts, is Tim Bontemps. What'd you have for lunch, Tim?
I haven't had lunch yet.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Ben McMahon. I know McMahon had lunch.
Just wolfed down a delicious salad my lady made for me. Had like little strawberry slices in there, nuts and all kinds of fancy stuff. Goat cheese, greatest cheese of all time. Phenomenal.
All right. So the All-Stars came out last night. There was a bunch of All-Stars this year. There was only so many spots. I'm not really super duper moved either way. Some guys got snubbed. If there's a year to be snubbed, it's this year. It's not going to be a great All-Star weekend. Do you guys have any strong feelings about that? I don't. I'm prepared to move on. Sorry, Devin Booker. Sorry, Mike Conley. You know, it'll get better. No commentary.
And one of those two guys will get in because obviously Anthony Davis will be replaced. I would say the one thing I would disagree with you on is, if there's a year to be snubbed, it ain't this year for Mike Conley, because this might be his last best chance. Devin Booker is going to be an All-Star several times in his career. I think that, this is maybe Conley's last chance.
You're an All-Star in our book, Mike Conley. There was a great NBA game that you guys both covered last night. Celtics versus Mavericks. Luka hit a couple of insane shots down the stretch of that game, including a game winner. Right? Was it at the buzzer, or was there time left?
There was a tick left, a tenth of a second left. Okay. Once it went through.
It was both the big threes he hit were disastrous plays. He was completely double teamed on the last play, and he just stepped back and hoisted way up over from the left wing, similar to the move that he made in the bubble last year, where he hit the big shot against the Clippers. What was that, a game five, maybe?
Game four. Yeah, when we had the 43-point triple double
on a sprained ankle.
Hurt his ankle 36 hours earlier, was questionable, a game time decision. Porzingis is out. The kid went for a 43-point triple double. And I mean, listen. What he's done this month, it's insane. You know, he's shooting 48% from three during this 6-1 run the Mavericks are on to get back to 500. And when Luka's hitting threes, I don't know what you do with him. He's absolutely unstoppable. But, you know, it's interesting. Last night, after he hits these two crazy threes, obviously Cojones factor just, you know, all-time performance. He brings up when he missed a wide open three against the Blazers in the one game that the Mavericks have lost during this stretch. Wide open three, last possession of the game. I think he had 44 that night. Ridiculous performance. But he was like, you know, sometimes you're going to miss them, like I did in that last Portland game. Sometimes you're going to make them. But my God, just the combination of Cojones and skill. And the skill it took for him to get off, like the last one is one thing. You know, it's a tie game. You know, you've got to get a shot up, no timeout. So you're just going to bring the ball up, you know, find some kind of space and launch it. The other one, though, dude, they hadn't scored in damn near 3 minutes. It was like last year's Mavs clutch offense. They'd lost an 11-point lead. Obviously, all the momentum is gone. Boston had just taken the lead for the first time. And forever, it was another yucky possession, and he gets it. And this, you know, the shot clock's running down. He ends up ISO'd on Tice, and is I mean, just the way he created it, got in a rhythm, stepped back and knocked it down. I was just like, geez.
So they've won 7 of 10 to get to 500. The Celtics bond temps have lost 7 of 10 and they are now below 500. And, you know, this is a game we'll get with two teams that, you know, at the start of the season could see themselves in the conference finals. There were three All-Stars on the floor last night because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were named All-Stars before the game. But two teams that are kind of, while trending in different directions at the exact moment, sort of stuck in the middle. And neither, I don't think either one of them, despite the greatness of Luka recently, I don't think either one of them got to feel great about where they are. And especially the Celtics, you know, another loss where their depth, I felt their depth, their lack of depth showed up. Where are the Celtics right now, Pontemps?
Well, I think the Mavs, to your point, have a much better excuse to be where they're at today. I mean, this is a team that is dealing with Kristaps Porzingis coming back from off-season knee surgery, getting, you know, started after the year began. This is a team that was devastated by COVID, you know, had Josh Richardson out for weeks, had Dorian Finney-Smith out for weeks, had Maxi Kleba out for weeks. That's three starter-level players. And then Kristaps is their fourth starter, in theory, right? So four of their five starters have had large chunks of their season messed up by injury or COVID. So you look at that and you go, hey, that would make sense that that team would be struggling a bit. And now that they're healthy, even if they're not perfect, like I think we'll get to later, they're still playing much better. And Luka's playing great and they're back to 500 and looking better. Boston's a mess. And they're a mess in large part, to your point, because they don't have very many good players. We've talked about this on the pod a couple of times already this year. But Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have both been awesome. They're both deserving All-Stars. And after that, there's just a lot of question marks with this team.
Well, and one of their other really good proven players has been hurt for a while. I mean, they miss Marcus Smart, too.
They've had one player out. But Kemba Walker's played for 5 or 6 weeks now and has generally been bad, although he had one of his best stretches of the season late in that game yesterday to get Boston ahead. Had a 4-point play, hit another three, made another play, but he was on pace until that late burst to have another game where he hit a few shots in the first quarter and then couldn't make a shot the rest of the game, which has tended to be his pattern in virtually every game. He's shooting like 48% in first quarters. I think he's shooting 32% the rest of the game and he's shooting 37% on the season. And that's just kind of the way things have been with him. But he also isn't playing tonight in Atlanta. We'll see what happens in that game. But look, even with Marcus Smart aside, they've had one injury. And even the 1 week where they had a bunch of guys out with COVID, they had all their games canceled, unlike a lot of these other teams like the Mavs and the Sixers and the Heat, who had to play with half a team, right? The bottom line is they're just not very deep. And if you have one starter out, you ought to be able to make up for that. And the Celtics are so thin, particularly in wing players, where they basically only have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on their team that are ambulatory, playable wing players, that they're just not very good. You know, they're playing three centers, Daniel Tice, Tristan Thompson, and Robert Williams. They have to play two of them together a lot because they don't have enough guys on the wing they can play. Jeff Teague has been an abject failure as a backup point guard, shooting 28% on twos and has been benched. He should be cut, frankly. I don't think he can play. And the other problem they have is they have five or six just absolutely dead roster spots. So between Carson Edwards and Tremont Waters and Taco Fall and Jeff Teague, these are guys that are not NBA players. And they have roster spots full of guys that can't help them. And that's why they have Aaron Nesmith, a rookie playing 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, and then old Peyton Pritchard was playing pretty well until Perk declared that he was first team all rookie. And he's, I mean, the curse of Perk is just for the
beautiful
that guy.
Put a beautiful piece on him too.
He has played well. Obviously, he's not making shots.
He stunk last night.
He was terrible last night. He finally hit a three and then instantly bricked another one and threw a pass 17 feet away from a guy on the other side of the court out of bounds. But he has been fine, and he's going to be fine. He's a rotation guard, and he's been he's been one of the few pleasant surprises they've had this year. But overall, they just don't have enough talent.
Here's the thing. And it kind of is very similar with him. When you have a max player, that guy's got to play at a max level. Kemba Walker obviously has not, coming off of a knee injury. You can say the same thing for Kristaps Porzingis with the Mavericks. You know, like, if you're going to be a contender, you can't have max guys who are just okay or available some of the time, or, well, they're still coming back. You know, maybe they'll get in a groove, or, boy, he's the worst defensive rotation player in the NBA statistically if we're talking about Porzingis. Kemba Walker has to be an all-star caliber player for the Celtics to have any hope of contending, and Kristaps Porzingis has to be a legit co-star for Luka for the Mavericks to have any hope of contending now or anytime in the, you know, near future, unless somehow they're able to flip him for something else, which, you know, who the hell's giving up major value for Kristaps Porzingis in year two of a max deal?
And just one thing to follow up on that to transition to what I think we're going to talk about. Over the past 3 years, the Celtics lost Al Horford for nothing. They lost Kyrie Irving for nothing. And as of now, they've lost Gordon Hayward for nothing.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of talent to walk out, not even counting guys like Marcus Morris, who left basically for nothing.
They traded Rozier for Kemba, but they could have done something with that.
And man, Rozier is playing well too.
Well, and this comes back to, you know, like I said, what I think the lead in what we're going to talk about, you know, the Celtics at least have this trade exception and their picks as a result of the Gordon Hayward trade. And we'll see between now and the deadline if they do something to upgrade this roster when they haven't made an in-season trade in 6 years and they clearly need help.
Okay, so as we sit here on the afternoon of February, well, whatever, Wednesday, there are 11 NBA teams right now who are within three games either way of 500, either 500 or either. And if you spread it out to five, the number jumps to like 13, 14. A year ago, and it's not really apples to apples because the schedule is a little bit off, but a year ago, there were three teams within three games of 500. So what you have here is this conglomeration, coagulation of blob at average basketball. And then you bring in the fact that there are 20 teams that will, quote unquote, make the postseason this year, you know, at least into the playoffs or into the play-in tournament. And then you add to the fact that there's a whole bunch of teams that are in that blob that have expectations one way or another. You know, Washington, as an example, you know, they've you know, been on a win streak. By the way, they are not in that blob, but they are a team that you don't see waving the white flag. Atlanta, they're five games under 500. They just signed a whole bunch of guys. They're not waving the white flag.
By the way, did you see Trae Young's all-star, second quarter all-star caliber defense with the game on the line last night? My God.
It was
tell me how much you care about winning again, please.
The last possession where the Cavs won the game basically in the last second. What happened with Trae Young there was an abomination. They were in a scramble, but it was an abomination.
Well, and it's also one of the limitations of Trae Young, right? And that if you have a guy who's 6 foot nothing, who's your main scorer, and he's got guys around him, he can't get a shot off.
Guys, right? There's nobody playing defense in the entire league right now, almost at all.
But that stood out.
You're right.
Oh, it's terrible.
Right now, and I mean, this will moderate a little bit, and I don't know what will happen in the playoffs, but right now, according to my man Hembo, in the stats and information, 8 of the top 12 offensive seasons in the history of the game, okay, are taking place right now. Okay. Brooklyn, the Clippers, the Bucks, the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Trailblazers, the Pelicans, and the Suns all are having seasons that are historically in the top 12 of all time.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, the only team that's not from the last 5 years that's in the top 12 of all time in terms of offensive efficiency, you guys want to take a guess?
From the last 14, 15 Warriors? That's not last 5 years. Are they up there?
No. The 16-17 Warriors and the 18-19 Warriors, the 19-20 Mavericks, which set the record last year, that's now fifth.
I was going to say that, yeah, the record is 116.1, correct?
I don't have
it. I think it is. Anyway,
116.7.
Yeah. Oh, well, 116.7. Okay, that'd rank fourth this year. Just a tick, a tenth of a point ahead of the Jazz. Nets, Bucks, and Clippers are all better than that this year.
So, yeah, so there's only one other one from the last 5 years that's outside the top, that's inside the top 12.
Ah.
And this team has a nickname.
Showtime Lakers?
You got it. 1986-87 Lakers. They rank anyway, my point is nobody's playing defense and everybody's bunched in the middle and anything could happen. And so to bring this back where I started this, guys, I have no idea what any of these teams are going to do at the trade deadline. And guess who else doesn't? The teams. Yeah. When I talk to people during the day, the questions that I get are who's buying and who's selling. And two teams that come up quite frequently right now are the Celtics buyers or sellers, or are the Mavericks buyers or sellers? And that's going to be very interesting. First off, I mean, there's only a couple of teams that we can say for sure are selling. The Cleveland Cavaliers are selling. Andre Drummond is widely available. There might be another player or two that could be available there. The Orlando Magic possibly could be willing to part with a guy like Evan Fournier, maybe a guy like Aaron Gordon. That is being chatted around about executives. The Houston Rockets, who have lost 8 in a row, there's chatter starting to go around about whether Victor Oladipo will be back on the market. They're sort of sinking. An interesting thing about Rockets.
That chatter's been going around since they got him.
Right. But he played okay. You know, they had a little bit of a lift when he first got there. You know, the other thing about the Rockets is so the Thunder can swap their pick with the Rockets this year, but they don't just swap their pick. They could also swap Miami's pick.
So basically the Rockets probably end up with Miami's pick is the way to put that.
Except there's a protection on that swap.
Top four.
So there's two protections really out there right now you really keep an eye on. One is the Minnesota Timberwolves protected pick owed to the Warriors if it gets in the top four. Top four, top three, Bontemps. I always forget.
Top three.
And then the Rockets, which I wouldn't have thought about a couple of weeks ago, but now they've lost 8 in a row, and there's some talk about them possibly selling.
Oh, they're selling. They're definitely selling.
We don't know where John Wall's health is going to be.
The only teams that are truly selling are Houston, Cleveland, and Oklahoma City. Everybody else is either not going either way, like probably a team like Detroit, or are trying to make the playoffs.
Right. So let's just simple economics, microeconomics, right? Let's go back to our college sophomore year. If there's a dearth of sellers and potentially a lot of buyers, the sellers have the advantage. So if you're on the fence about buying or selling, you may want to think about selling because you might be able to do much better. So I'll start with you, Bontemps. Let's talk about the Celtics. Are the Celtics buyers? Or are they sellers? And they have not made a midseason trade in 6 years, which was Isaiah Thomas at 257. It's a famous story at 257 or something on that trade deadline day. They picked up Isaiah Thomas, terrific trade. Maybe they're going to do nothing, but are they buyers or sellers, do you think?
I don't think they're sellers because the only stuff they have that they're going to sell, they're not going to sell, and nobody wants the rest of it. So I think it's just a question whether they stand pat or they buy. And I'm not sure what the answer is. I mean, I think a lot of people here.
What about Kemba?
I mean, this is sort of going to come back to the Kristaps Porzingis conversation we're probably going to have later, which is that both of those guys fall into the same camp as McMahon kind of laid out earlier of. They're not really anywhere near where their value is or where their value was, you know, say 6 months or a year ago. And so if you're going to trade them, you're essentially trading them to bet on the fact that they're just not going to be that good again.
Well, and are you trading them with positive value or because of their contracts? Like, is that a salary dump at that point? Like,
right.
You can't trade these guys as a salary dump. Like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, so you can do it. I just don't think that the Celtics will do it.
You can't do that and convince your young stars that you are really trying to compete. That's a tough sell.
Okay. Well, as Bontemps, as you said, they have the $28 million trade exception that they got in the Gordon Hayward trade, and they have all of their first-round picks going forward. We know for the last 7-8 years, Boston's always had extra picks, extra picks, extra picks. Well, now they have all of these picks that they could trade. And the ability to make basically trade for almost every player in the league with that trade exception, with the picks, I mean, that puts them in the game for a whole bunch of people if they want to go.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I mean, it also should be said, the Celtics, you know, have been rumored to be involved in everything under the sun over the past several years and have done nothing, basically, right? They sat on the Sacramento Kings pick thinking that would be a great pick. It was the 14th pick in the draft. Memphis. They sat on the Memphis pick thinking it'd be a great pick. It was the 14th pick in the draft. They've had a lot of misses in the draft. You know, they drafted Romeo Langford last year. He's showed a couple flashes of playing some defense. He's also been hurt basically the entire time he's been in the league. He's allegedly coming back after the All-Star break. They certainly could use him. Aaron Nesmith has not done much in the minutes he's gotten to play lately. He's been okay, but that's not looking like a banner pick at the 14th pick.
No, we're not going to evaluate rookies just yet, but your point is well taken.
The Celtics, Sadiq Bey had 7 billion points and won Eastern Conference Player of the Week after beating the Celtics, and he was picked 5 picks later. So I would say that at minimum, it's not looking as good as it could have been.
Well, and they had the Thibault move that they last year. They could have had Thibault.
Right. They had Thibault, and so they got Grant Williams or Brandon Clark, either him or Thibault, and they got Grant Williams, who's been okay. Certainly, he played big minutes, and Carson Edwards has been an abject failure. And look, they had the 30th pick in the draft this year, which normally you would say isn't much of a pick. They essentially traded that to get off of Enes Kanter's money when they didn't have to because Gordon Hayward was leaving. And or wound up leaving, I should say. And that pick, Desmond Bane, is shooting 45% from three and is
he's a good player. I mean, he's a three and D
wing player, which, you know, look at the Celtics. They have no wing players who can play. So yeah,
Memphis can draft, Memphis can draft.
Yeah.
Got him and Xavier Tillman at 30 and 35, two rotation players at 30 and 35. The Celtics would die to have a couple. And Brandon Clark at 21. Celtics look a lot different if they have two or three of those guys on the team at this point, right?
Celtics could really use Bane. Bane would be really.
By the way,
use Bane and Brandon Clark. They would be their sixth and seventh guys right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, the Mavericks could use Bane too. Josh Green, we'll see.
No question.
You know,
no
question. One of them guys in the G League now, but yeah.
So look, to make a long story short, there's been a lot of chatter here. People are obviously upset with the way this is going. This team is not very good. And it's especially
Brad
hard
Stevens,
to be not very
Brad
good.
Stevens getting a bullseye on his back for the first time, really.
Yeah.
Well, he is. And I think the fault of this is on the front office because, you know, coming into the season, you could look at this team and they had 5 or 6 players who you thought were good. And after that, it was all question marks. And if you let one really good player after another walk out the door without getting anything for them, and you have all these picks, and you sort of just let them all go by and draft players that are mediocre or worse.
Well, they drafted Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, too.
Yes, they did. But they had after they had those guys, they had all this other ammo, and they just kind of waited it out. And they kept thinking they were going to get a top 3 pick out of it, and they didn't. They got the 14th pick. It was like, look, they could have just as easily had the Kings be terrible like always and had a top 5 pick in that draft. They could have just as easily had Memphis be bad last year and then have an unprotected pick in this year's draft, but they didn't. They got the 14th pick twice, right? So, like, if that's the game you play, you have to be judged on the results. And the results are the Celtics have sat around and let a lot of pitches go by, and as a result, now have 2 all-NBA level players and not much else. And again, that's why they have a big decision to make over the next few
years. When we talked about this, just it wasn't directly in this vein a few months ago, and I said that the Celtics didn't make offers for guys, I was dressed down. So let me just say the Celtics did make offers for guys like Paul George. They just didn't make the offers that
whether they made offers or not, which they did, you know, they made offers. They didn't get any of these guys. So, you know, again, it's just you're judged on the result. That's right. They didn't make deals. And it's not to say that they absolutely should have made deals either, right? Like, I'm not saying they should have gone and traded 7,000 picks for somebody. Like, it's hard to know how that stuff works out, but again, we can just look at what they have. And what they have are two awesome, elite young wing players, the exact kind of guys you want to build a team around. And then they have a team built around them that isn't ready to win. And that's why they're a 500 team. And yes, if Marcus Smart was healthy, to Tim's point, they'd have a few more wins and they'd look better. But you still wouldn't look at them and think that they're going to go into the playoffs with this group and be able to compete with Brooklyn and Milwaukee and Philly. But they're just not. So are they going to go out and get, you know, Aaron Gordon or, you know, some other good to very good level wing player who could play the four and can beef up this roster and give them a shot?
They need like a combo forward, right? That's what they need.
Yes, they need a guy who can play the four and who, more than anything, they need another guy who can create their own shot. Because in today's NBA, as you pointed out, with nobody playing defense, if you have only two or maybe even just three guys on the whole team who can dribble and make a play, defenses that are even bad defenses can load up on you. Like on Sunday when the Celtics played the Pelicans, in the second half, Stan Van Gundy said, hey, you know what? The Celtics only have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who I'm worried about. I'm going to throw every guy on my team at them, and I'm going to let Kemba shoot a bunch of jumpers. He clanged every shot, and all these other guys can't dribble. So I don't care what they do.
So this has been a rough road trip for the Celtics. You know, they lost in overtime over the weekend to the Pelicans. Zion had a basket at the end of the game. Tatum ends up forcing overtime with a tremendous display of talent to get that shot off and to get that ball in the basket. But they were down because Zion got the ball and Tristan Thompson, who was not a slight man, Zion just bulldozed him.
Yeah, I went through him like tissue paper.
And I do not think that was a flop. I know some people thought it was an offensive foul. Tristan was not flopping. And J.J. Redick said something earlier this year. It was a simple quote, but my God, was it profound. He said, and I may not have it exactly correct, but he said basically like all of us in the league would love to take 15 layups a game with our dominant hand. We just aren't good enough to do it.
Right. It's hard to get there.
But this is a last 10-second play. Tristan Thompson is in good guarding position and guarding him well, and Zion was like, get away.
Yeah, he knew exactly what Zion was going to do, which is drive left, and he was there, and he went right through him.
By the way, who's the other guy in the league who's able to take, you know, 10, 12, 15 layups per game with his dominant hand or dunks? Giannis. And yeah. You can talk, you know, that's why when people say Giannis, he's skilled enough to get the hell to the hoop.
Yeah.
As a primary right. ball handler, I'm pretty impressed.
Zion is probably the greatest interior scorer I've seen since Shaq.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. I mean, he's basically a 6'5" Shaq, which has its own limitations.
Zion's got his downsides, and we've talked and written about it, but yeah. My God, the man's ability to create angles in the paint is
legendary. In that moment summed it up, right? Tristan was guarding him hard and knew exactly what he was going to do and was ready for it. And it didn't matter anyway. they need a combo forward who can play and who can create offense because they don't have enough guys who can do that. But that is the thing about this team. It's not that they're a million miles away, but what they're missing is Gordon Hayward, right? That's exactly what they're missing. And
they're missing a multi-talented wing player who can, you know, dribble, pass, and shoot, which Hayward
And they let him walk out the door. And like last year, even they were a thin team.
He didn't want to re-sign with them. I mean, it wasn't like they kicked him out the door. But
they could have chose to pay him, and they didn't choose to pay him, which is fine. I'm not even saying that decision itself is wrong. All these decisions in a vacuum are not necessarily wrong, right? Decisions not to trade for these other guys, to not sign Al Horford, to not sign Gordon Hayward. All those things are defensible, right? Like paying Al Horford that contract wouldn't look great right now. All those things are defensible. But when you put them all in a row, that's how you build up to a situation where this team is short on players now. And I said that because if they can get another good to very good player on this roster, they do have the supporting pieces in place. Like all these guys that we're talking about, whether it's Grant Williams or Peyton Pritchard or the centers they have, they're all good supporting cast guys.
They kind of have the hard part done, which is they have the all-stars.
Right.
Yes.
That's the hard part. What they need is the part where you put guys around him. There's a whole bunch of teams out there that are dying to get Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yes, they have the super high level guys, and they have like the 5 to 9 guys that you need. Right? They need one more guy in between. Which if they can get that guy, it might all come into play.
They need Kemba Walker to be a max player.
Well, they need Kemba Walker to be a max player, but they also do still need another guy.
Yeah.
Because even with Kemba, they still don't have enough. Like, they just don't. And particularly on the wing, you can't, in my opinion, in today's NBA where teams are trying to play small, you can't be having to play two bigs together, like basically two centers together a decent chunk of the time just to have your most effective players on the court.
They have to do that because they have no wing players.
That's right. They just have to add wing players to have any real shot of being a championship level.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
The Mavericks are also a team that when I talk to executives out there, they wonder whether they're buying or selling. There was a report in the Bleacher Report over the weekend, McMahon, that said Kristaps Porzingis was being floated on the trade market. I have to say, I've heard the same.
Yeah, and now, look, Cuban shot it down strongly on the record. Carlisle shot it down strongly on the record. And if it's true or not, they're going to say the same damn thing. So whatever.
Right. But let me just say that the reason I didn't bring it up is because I could, you know, there's all these shades of gray when guys get floated around. I don't think they're actively like, we are going to trade Kristaps Porzingis. Well,
because here's the thing. Is Kristaps Porzingis untouchable? Hell no. Is he an attractive trade chip right now? Also, hell no. And the Mavericks' chances to contend are tied to Kristaps Porzingis. I'm talking about now and, you know, over the course of his contract and perhaps even beyond. Either he needs to be that legit number two guy, or he needs to be their ticket to that guy. In other words, a KP plus package for, you know, whichever is the next or another disgruntled star who's looking for a chance to contend. Which, you know what? If you're a legit star and you team up with Luka Doncic, you'll have a chance to contend. Luka's that good. But Porzingis he's ridiculous. And he's 21. He turns 22 next week. He's unbelievable. Porzingis has had glimpses where you think, well, maybe he is that good. But he has not had any kind of consistency playing at that sort of level. And then obviously, B, and perhaps I should have put this one first, he's hurt a lot. He's never finished a season healthy. He's going to miss several games throughout the course of the season. You don't know if he's going to be healthy. He's, you know, hadn't been healthy yet at the end of a season. And then, you know, like his... He is actually, now he's missed the last two games with his lower back tightness. He's started to play well again offensively. This month he's averaging like 23 on 50, 40, 90, wah, wah, wah. He is so bad defensively right now. And he can't be a one-way guy. He has to be a two-way force. I'm not exaggerating. You look at defensive rating for guys who play 20-plus minutes, he is dead last in the NBA, right behind Marvin Bagley III. That's how freaking bad he is. I mean, he can't get in a stance. He can't move. And I'm, you know, Carlisle says, well, you know, he didn't have a training camp. He's playing his way into shape. And I hear all that. But you've got physical issues. I wonder how much you have effort issues, and it's, you know, if he's not right, this team's just a
when he's having a good night, though, it's a sight to see.
Yeah, and you can talk yourself in, you can go back and watch him in the three playoff games he did play in against the Clippers, and you can talk yourself into still saying, hey, he's got potential to be that dude next to Luka. And I think sometimes ego still plays a part, but their games do complement each other. You know, Porzingis as a guy who can both roll and pop, that certainly complements Luka's game. They've got some other decent players. Obviously, they were hoping they'd be in the market for another bona fide star this summer. And I would be surprised if the Mavericks are sellers in terms of willing to take a step back. Simply because when you got a guy like Luka, you don't want to waste any time, and you don't want.
I agree.
You don't want to plant seeds in a superstar's mind that this franchise isn't always going to be all in on winning.
I agree with that, but they have some guys on expiring contracts who are very good rental options. Jason Richardson.
Yeah.
Jason Richardson.
former dunk champ.
Yeah. Josh Richardson actually a good rental option?
He's playing better lately. Notably, he's not always in their closing lineup. Part of that's because Jalen Brunson is become one of the best backup point guards in the league and also plays well off of Luka. But you're talking about Josh Richardson, Tim Hardaway Jr., who's been really, really good since going to that sixth man role. And then, if you're talking about just not necessarily a rental to make your team better, but a sizable expiring contract, then Johnson's in that mix.
James Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Knicks fans have been watching the Mavericks like a hawk.
Oh yeah. They want that lottery pick, and they don't like the 6-1 run that the Mavericks are on.
That's right. Well, I mean, look, right now they continue to play this way. I think they're,
as long as Luka's healthy, they're not giving up that bad of a pick, but that trade is still not looking as bad as a lot of people thought it was the day that the Knicks made it, given the way that Porzingis has played, because it's true. She's just not lived up to the expectation that, that you would have hoped for. And look, that's not that it's certainly possible that changes, but to Tim's point, he has not played that well. He's been hurt a bunch, and if the Knicks end up with the 18th pick in the draft, that's probably a lot better than a lot of people would have guessed when they made that trade.
So you're talking about Luka Doncic and the All-Star. What you guys don't know is that I just had a trivia question that was a total disaster. I had to change the trivia question, and Bontemps and McMahon were all over me, and they are correct. I deserve it. This trivia question, as the entire Hoop Collective, is brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car. Love your car with the new CarMax. Love your car guarantee. Chris
Go to CarMax so you don't have some used car salesman sell you a bad car like Brian tried to sell us his bad trivia question.
As I kept reading it, I was like, I have this wrong. I'm just going to say it was bad. It was a bad wrong. Chris Paul is the third player to be named an all-star with four different franchises. So he was a Hornet, a Clipper, a Thunder, and a Sun. Who Shaq. Are the other? There's one.
Okay, how many?
Moses
we got?
Malone.
You got it. Wow, we've got some geniuses
That's
here.
That's it.
Malone. You well, guys I, had I knew, it. In five
dude, we didn't, I mean, we I didn't mean, have was, any misses.
That was an easy one.
That's like Shaq's field goal percentage when he was being guarded by Sean Bradley or something.
Well, okay, congratulations to you. Why don't you guys both? I'm going to have you guys start doing this trivia thing every week since I'm obviously very bad at it.
Okay, I got some trivia for you. And if you follow me on Twitter, you already have the answer. But Luka is the second guy in the last 25 years to make not one, but two go-ahead three-pointers in the final 30 seconds of a game. Who's the other one?
I actually saw this on your Twitter, and I forget it now. Kobe.
No, pretty far from Kobe, sir.
Oh, two in the, you're saying to
in one game, two go ahead threes in the final 30 seconds of one game.
At first, I thought you said like two, like go ahead. I thought you just said two. I thought you meant like two go ahead threes at all. I was like, that doesn't.
You know what I actually thought, McMahon, when I saw this tweet, and I can't remember who it was now, even though it was less than 24 hours ago, so you show you what kind of frame of mind I was in. I thought to myself, why didn't he save that for the trivia question on the podcast?
Okay, I'll give you a hint. This guy's other, perhaps most.
Oh, I saw it.
His other biggest claim to NBA fame might be that. When he was briefly Dirk Nowitzki's teammate, he accidentally slammed Dirk's hand in a car door.
That's a good guess, but I would say he's also known for his hair.
I didn't see this tweet. Known for his hair.
I remember. I don't.
I have no idea on this.
Look, we'd be here until the podcast data ran out. It's Dan Dickow.
Dan Dickow.
The
immortal Dan Dickow.
Wow.
For the New Orleans Hornets.
I wouldn't even remember what team he played for. Although, I like Dan Dickow. I like Dan Dickow. He's a good guy.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Speaking of trivia questions, I think I have the answer to, this is my 18th year covering the NBA. I have the answer to the worst coaching job I've ever seen.
Ooh-wee.
And that is the job that Chris Finch just took with the Minnesota Timberwolves. This has got to be the worst. This is the worst. I mean, any coaching job, I guess, is an opportunity. And I guess the bar is going to be relatively low. When you think about the situation he walks into, the complete political nightmare that walks into the way that he got the job, which, by the way, has even been denounced today by the Coaches Association.
Right.
His own Coaches Association put out a statement saying that the process sucked. So no matter where you are,
it wasn't diverse or transparent.
Right. No matter where you are on that, his situation, he has to walk into that door, even though he's gotten some supportive comments from his players. You walk into that. Two, he's changing teams in the middle of the season. So that's only happened a couple of times in NBA history. And the concept of changing teams is just wild. There's been a couple of more coaches who've come in sort of from off the street. And that's tough. But now you're changing teams. You don't even have... If it's one thing that's hard enough to be an interim, you don't have the knowledge. Two, three.
The last guy that did it was Lionel Hollins in Memphis. Certainly, I think Chris will be quite happy if he can have a similar run in Minnesota to the one Lionel had.
Exactly right. The difference, though, is that Lionel had already been there as an assistant coach and an interim coach.
Yeah,
he knew the players, at least some of the players in the organization. All right, they're the worst team in the league. Okay, they have probably no draft pick, depending on how the lottery balls bounce. They have no cap space.
They're either going to get an incredible player in the draft or no player. That's going to be that is going to be a fascinating lottery night, both with them and the Rockets, especially with the top four or five guys in this draft are absolute studs. And that is going to be a long sweat for those two teams to wait and see what happens.
The team is for sale. Okay, so you have no idea. Right. Well, whatever. I mean, they could sell, and then you have no idea how that's going to change things. Okay. And with the way this, and you know, you guys, when you hear this podcast, you'll already have know the second half schedule. But it's my understanding the second half schedule is going to be just a mess of five games and seven nights and three games and five nights, and just they're going to jam that sucker in. You ain't getting any practice time. Like you're not going to have anything resembling practice time. You're going to be able to install stuff. Here you go. Here's this, you know, this flaming bag, Chris. Good luck to you. And like, look, I mean, it means that if he achieves in this job, and I don't even know what achieve means, it makes it all the more impressive. A target has been put on Gerson Rosas, the GM, in this transaction. I will tell you, I am putting the target on the owner, Glenn Taylor, because Glenn Taylor, when he hired Gerson Rosas to be a general manager, it was clear that he wanted Ryan Saunders to remain the coach. And look, guys, I have a personal affinity for Ryan Saunders. Mm-hmm. I like him as a person a lot. I spent 3 days with him last year for a story that never ran because the team went into the tank, but they had a good November. And I went up to Minneapolis and I spent 3 days with him, and he was very welcoming and open. And I talked to a bunch of his players. His players loved him.
Everybody loves Ryan. He's an awesome dude.
But you sort of cornered Gerson into keeping him. And then you put the team for sale, but you weren't really sure you were going to sell the team, because he's done this before. And now the team's been hanging out there for 9 months or even more, and he's had offers and he won't take them. And so now everybody's just sort of walking around on their tiptoes, wondering when the new boss is going to come. And so Gerson Rosas decides he's got to make a coaching change, and he thinks, he's like, I got to get my guy in here, because if I wait till the end of the year and I just experiment with somebody I'm not 100% sure on, the team could be sold and we all could be fired.
Yeah.
So by not giving the general manager full control to make his coaching hire, which, you know, they can all deny it, but it's clear that, you know, Ryan's affinity for the Taylor family and vice versa, it's clear. And then having the team just hang out there for sale, just dangling out there for the uncertainty, led to this situation. Now, they've had bad luck with injuries and COVID and all kinds of other stuff. There's no doubt about that. But this goes, as so many things go, it goes back to leadership from ownership, which is the most important thing. Almost, I would say, second to the lottery in the right year. The second most important thing to success of a franchise is your ownership.
Well, they've won the lottery a couple times. What, few times?
And they traded for a number one pick, too.
Yeah.
They traded for Wiggins.
So I guess you could argue ownership's more important because you win.
You have to win the lottery in the right year. But I've never seen a job that's worse than that. I did hear he got a 3-year contract with a team option for a fourth year. So at least he got a multiple year deal. So he's protected a little bit. But I'll bet he didn't, you know, he's a first-time head coach. So he's not exactly getting, a contract that's going to, you know, guarantee, massive money for the rest of his life. So I don't know Chris at all. I've never spoken to him. I wish him luck, but and Gerson, or I think Nick Nurse, who was the head coach in Toronto where Finch was an assistant, he said, and I mean, I'll take Nick at his word, I believe him, he said this came together in 36 hours. So he may have had some feel that this could happen and he would be a candidate, but he had to make this choice fast. You want this job. And also it had to kind of be kept quiet. So he couldn't, I mean, I don't know what he did, but my guess is he didn't call up 15 of his coaching friends and say, hey,
Chris Finch has been waiting for this opportunity for decades. There was no choice here. This was, you get the opportunity and you take the job. Might be the worst job in the league, but it's one of 30 jobs.
Exactly.
And there's no turning it down. I mean, he's a really well-respected assistant coach, and maybe he would have got another job at some point, but he's a guy in his early 50s. He's interviewed for a bunch of jobs. He's been a lead assistant in the NBA for a while. He's coached against Nick Nurse in Europe for a bunch of years. Like, this is a guy who has been waiting for this opportunity. There wasn't any choice here. It was just, when am I taking the job? You know.
Well, I wish him luck. I've never seen a harder position for a coach to be put in. So,
not ideal.
Well, that is for sure. That we can say for sure. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Ben McMahon. Thank you to Tim Bontemps. Thank you to Troy Farkas, who edited out my foible on the Twitter or on the trivia.
Or did he?
Or did he? Hope he did. I'm going to come off looking like a you know what. thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Adios, amigos.